Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and we are about to have a conversation with Senator Ben Cardin, joining us from Capitol Hill. And Senator Cardin, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Mark, it's always a pleasure being on your show. I hope you had a nice holiday.
I did. How about you?
Very nice. A little rested after about a week off. That was good. Now ready to get back to work.
And coming back to a very different Washington, D.C.
No question about that. The House has already shown it's going to do things in a different way. They've scheduled a vote for the repeal of the Affordable Care Act for January the 12th. We'll see how that goes. I personally think the Republican leadership's making a mistake. They're not telling the American people what they would replace it with, so you have to assume that they would just like to repeal the bill and take away the benefits that have already taken effect and make it more difficult for seniors to afford health care, jeopardizing the financial stability of Medicare and increasing the deficit. So it's been an unusual start, I think, particularly on the House side.
You can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. Join us with your Senator Ben Cardin, who joins us for the rest of this hour. 410-319-8888. You just finished honoring Senator Barbara Mikulski, who now is the longest-serving woman in the Senate ever in the history.
It was a very emotional day. Senator Mikulski is now in the history books, the longest-serving woman senator in the history of the United States Senate. It was a day in which I had an opportunity to speak about my colleague on the floor of the United States Senate. And what I said, it really came from my heart, that when you asked any Marylander what you think of Barbara Mikulski, and almost everyone will say she's a fighter, and she is a person who fights on behalf of people of Maryland. And she has an extremely long and effective career helping the people of our state. So it was an emotional day that she now is in the books as the longest-serving senator in the history of America as a woman.
That, some serious questions about what you've just raised and some other issues that we're facing in this country and that you will be facing in the U.S. Senate representing us. You talked about health care, and I think the majority of Americans would oppose the repeal of health care, though I think the majority of Americans on some levels may be semi-ambivalent about it all because there are still over 45 million Americans without health care. There are still difficulties with people's insurance. I mean, even with our little company that we have here and our few employees for our production company, you have to come up with $2,500 a year before you can even have it kick in. I mean, there's a lot of issues that people see and they're not quite sure, I think, in many ways, what is the Democratic Party's message about health care and where it's taking us, and now the Republicans want to repeal it. That's the A part.
Well, first, let me express how I think people feel about health care. Everybody has their own views. But I think the more people learn about what was in the Affordable Care Act, the more people start to say, gee, that's not bad. I could use that help. For a small business owner, they're getting a credit. They can now provide health benefits for their employees. They're pretty happy with this. For a company like yours who perhaps has to go into the marketplace to buy insurance and you're now paying 20 or 30 or 40% more than you should because you're a small company, you know that help is on the way because there will now be these local exchanges that will give you a more affordable product. And if you're a senior, you're now getting help on your prescription drugs if you're in the donut hole. You got $250 last year. You're going to get more than twice that this year with discounts for brand name drugs if you fall into the donut hole. And you know that in 2020, that donut hole is going to be gone altogether, or that you now have an annual wellness exam paid for by Medicare. So people are starting to find out more and more about what's in this bill, and they like it. But what the Republicans in the House are trying to do in repealing it, I think most people are saying, isn't it time to move on? Isn't it time to start looking about how we're going to create more jobs in America? Isn't it time for Democrats, Republicans to say, look, we don't want to go back to that partisan gridlock. We want you to work together to solve problems. So now get to work and get people jobs, and let's get our energy issue resolved, and let's deal with the budget deficit, and let's sit down and work out the differences between the two parties and move this nation forward. I think that's what people want to see.
410-319-8888. Senator Ben Cardin is with us, and Steve in Essex, you're on the air.
Senator Cardin, thank you. I really support you, and I agree with what you just said. My question is regarding Social Security. I feel that there's a lot of misinformation about Social Security, and there's sort of almost this idea that it's some kind of a welfare program or something that, I think people need to get back to realizing that we're all pay into Social Security at the trust fund, and it's and the money is there, and it's backed up by the full faith and credit of the United States. It's not something that can just be bargained away or chipped away at, or at least shouldn't be. And it's really upsetting to me when I heard, I think it was Lindsey Graham on the one of the Sunday talk shows talking about, you know, beginning to do something like means testing, or, you know, it seems that it's no longer the third rail of politics, that it's starting to become something that can be played around with seriously, and that politicians somehow don't think that people are going to be upset about the idea that that would be taken away. Well, I just wish there was more, you know, the misinformation could be dispelled more.
Well, you're exactly right. Social Security is a program we all pay into while we work. We have to. The payroll taxes are matched by our employer, and the money goes into a trust fund, and it's used when we retire. And our retirement benefits are based upon our earnings when we worked. There's also a disability part to the Social Security system. If you get injured or disabled while you cannot work, there's also survivor benefits. So Social Security has evolved since it was first passed in the 1930s to be a more comprehensive plan. But all of it is paid for through the payroll tax structure. Some money comes into it through the taxation of Social Security benefits on higher income seniors. That money is used to help pay the benefits, and the money is there. It is not a program that is a welfare program. It is an annuitant retirement plan, survivor benefits, and disability insurance.
I'm curious what your thoughts were once the vote went in about the tax measure that passed in this last Congress, when many people thought Democrats would push harder when it came to not compromising on changing the tax code so that the wealthiest Americans pay their fair share, I think as most Americans like to see, even those who have the money. What were your thoughts on that battle in the Senate and the House and how it ended?
Well, the tax agreement was a true political compromise. It certainly had provisions in there that I did not want to see happen. I did not want to see the extension of the Bush tax cuts for the high-income taxpayers. I don't think we can afford to do that. That revenue could have been used for a much more effective purpose. It doesn't really stimulate the economy. On the other hand, I was pleased we were able to extend the unemployment insurance benefits that are critically important for those who are currently unemployed to get the same benefits of our earlier unemployed individuals as far as the number of weeks. We also had a lot of other important provisions that were included in the bill. But I just want to underscore one point that I was very happy about, and that is that this political system worked. You know, the fact that I didn't like a lot of provisions, and I'm sure my Republican colleagues didn't like a lot of provisions also, is an indication that there was truly a political compromise that was reached that allowed us to do something that was very important. Economists tell us that if we would have denied the extension of the tax rates for the middle-income families, that could have had a very negative impact on our economy. Well, we didn't want to see that happen. And I think the way it finally came out, it was a credit to the political system. Would I have done it differently? You bet. Do I think we should not extend the tax breaks for higher income? Yes. I don't think those tax breaks should be extended.
Is it the compromise was necessary? Just to explain to the people, I'm just curious from your perspective. Was it the compromise was a political necessity on the Senate and House floor to get this thing passed? Or could it have passed without that compromise, and what would have happened?
No, it could not have passed without that compromise. The votes in the United States Senate were not there to pass the threshold needed in order to extend the tax breaks just for those in middle income. We did not have the tax. We tried. We tried to do it. We lost the cloture vote.
And those are the kind of the rules in the Senate, that and the filibuster, that many people, it boggled many people's understanding,
right,
how that works.
Yeah, and I don't know if I have enough time tonight to try to explain to you. I am a co-sponsor of the resolution that's now on the floor of the United States Senate to modify the filibuster rules.
Right.
That'll be coming up sometime in the next couple weeks. We've extended the first day of the session so that we can consider making changes in regular order, although it's certainly our hope that the Democrat and Republican leaders will get together and modify the abuses in Senate rules. To me, it's just unconscionable that an individual senator can hold up the passage of a bill. That's just wrong. And sometimes they don't even identify who they are. So it's not just the 60-vote threshold that's been used, the filibuster. It's also the obstructionist of individual senators denying a bill the leader an opportunity to bring a bill to the floor. It's happened on confirmations. It's happened on relatively minor bills, and it's happened on major bills. So we are trying to correct those rules, and we hope that we'll have some Republican support for that, and we hope we can do it in a congenial way, and we'll see what happens in the next couple weeks. But you can't allow one senator to block 300 bills from being considered that happened in this Congress, or the judges to be held up, or the presidential appointments to be held up because of the what's called a hold by an individual senator.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Senator Ben Cardin is with us here for the rest of this hour. Emmanuel in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening to the senator, and thank you for coming on and
sure.
Keep people informed. I had a question in reference to the seniors. There was a $250 stimulus that was supposed to be, from my understanding, passed just before the Congress concluded, and I understand that the Republicans, you know, X'd it out. And my question was there a way that that could have been attached to maybe that tax bill, that plan, and if not, would there be a consideration for a $250 stimulus for, you know, for Social Security people who are gaining, the elders who are gaining the Social Security?
Let me give you the reason why we thought that was appropriate. There was no COLA adjustment for Social Security recipients this year. It's the second year in a row that there was no COLA adjustment. Last year, that's 2009, we gave a $250 check to our seniors, to the Social Security recipients, because they don't really get the same benefits from the tax incentives that we put in the stimulus package.
Right.
And we did that also because there was no COLA adjustment. So the view was, and Senator Bernie Sanders was the lead sponsor of this, that the right thing to do was to give our seniors a $250 check this year, 2010, because, again, there was no COLA given out. That bill, we thought, would help stimulate the economy, and we thought it was a fair thing to do. It was considered separate from the tax bill because we could not get – it was not in the consideration on the tax mix. And we brought it up on a cloture vote, and we did not have the 60 votes. In fact, I don't even think we had the 50 votes, but we certainly did not have the 60 votes necessary to get that passed. And, again, it was a Republican effort to block that issue from coming to the floor. You know, our view is you're going to give breaks, particularly to those who are making over $1 million a year. The least we can do is give a $250 check to our Social Security recipients who didn't get a COLA increase this year.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, that answered my question. I just wondered whether any consideration coming up again on the next vote.
Well, this Congress is going to be more difficult because in the last Congress, we felt pretty confident in getting these bills through the House.
Right.
And the challenge was the Senate. Now it's going to be extremely difficult to get any of these bills through the House. You should understand that under the Constitution, all tax bills must originate in the House of Representatives. So, therefore, the Senate can only consider the legislation if it comes over from the House.
Right.
And it's not likely that the House will give us an opportunity to act on it. And so it'll have to start in the House, and the prospects there aren't very great.
Emmanuel, thanks so much. Glad you're part of this program. 410-319-8888 with Senator Ben Cardin. And Tony, you're on the air.
Hello, I have a question for the senator. When you say that the tax break for the wealthiest Americans was something pushed by the Republicans, I get kind of confused about that, wondering who the Republicans were actually representing. Because when you look at the wealth gap between workers and executives, it went from 1 to 40 in 1980 to 1 to 700 today. So you mean to tell me these same folks who are reaping the benefits of this great wealth disparity also want a tax break? I get confused about that.
I share your confusion. I mean, the answer is yes. It's exactly what happened. We on the floor of the United States Senate, initially took up a bill that would extend the Bush tax cuts for those who make under $250,000 a year. That bill failed a cloture vote, and we couldn't move it. So we decided, in a compromise, we would do those who have taxable income under $1 million. That failed a cloture vote. The Republicans refused to support an extension of tax relief unless everyone got the breaks, including those who are multimillionaires. I couldn't agree with you more. It's hard to understand. The people who are making over $1 million a year have done very well under these economic times. It's the working families that have been the ones who have suffered, and they're the ones who need the relief, not those who are making over $1 million a year.
Thank you again for your call, Tony. Let's go to another caller here. A lot of people calling in to talk to the senator, 410-319-8888. So I'll keep my questions to the minimum here so they can get in. Craig, you're on the air. Greg.
Hi, Senator Cardin. Me and my friend, a lot of people I know have questions about why the Democrats are not fighting as hard as the Republicans. And here's a case in point. The recent tax bill had to give tax cuts to the rich in order to get the unemployment insurance benefits to pass because there might be a filibuster. But the Democrats routinely don't force the Republicans to actually filibuster. The only filibuster I can remember is the one actually by Bernie Sanders, and he was actually against the tax cuts for the rich, and he could only filibuster for 8 or 9 hours. So my question is, instead of always withdrawing bills, why don't the Democrats fight for bills, force the Republicans to filibuster, and then break their filibuster out after 24, 48, 72 hours, or whatever, however long it takes?
Well, I agree with you, and that's the resolution that I've co-sponsored, the Tom Udall resolution that would change the filibuster rule, would say that in order for a filibuster to be effective, you must be on the floor actually debating the issue, that you can't just go into what we call quorum calls. The difficulty now under the Senate rules is that you need to get 60 votes in order to bring an issue to a close. So the burden is on the majority to bring an issue to a vote, and you can't bring it to a vote unless you have 60 votes. What we are saying, let's change the rules. Let's say that we can bring an issue to a vote unless there are people there on the floor prepared to speak to prevent that vote from taking place. So we agree with you. A filibuster should be a filibuster. Under the current Senate rules, that's not what happens. We got to change the rules of the Senate.
So what if the rules change, then what Senator Sanders did would have stood?
What Senator Sanders was doing was making a point. We had a bill on the floor to pass the tax bill for our for the compromise reached with the president and the Congress. Senator Sanders took the opportunity to speak for 8 hours on the floor of the United States Senate. Any senator can do that. You can do that. But if we didn't have 60 votes for the bill, we couldn't have passed the bill. So
right.
Bernie Sanders was not really filibustering from the point of view of saying, look, I got the votes to block you passing this because you can't get 60 votes. We had 80 votes to pass the bill. We knew that. So this was strictly during, and I think it was during post-cloture time. When you invoke cloture, there's 30 hours of debate that's permitted. So he was actually using some of the post-cloture time. The bottom line was he was demonstrating a point. He says, I'm against this bill, and I'm prepared to filibuster it. And to me, a filibuster means I'm going to be on the floor speaking about it. I congratulate him for that. He did the right and honorable thing. Unfortunately, there are senators whose names you'll never know, who have blocked legislation from passing the United States Senate, who have never spoken one word on the floor. They did a filibuster without speaking, and to me that's wrong. You should come to the floor and speak, and you should have. I don't have any problem if you want to do an old-fashioned filibuster and stay on the floor and speak. That's one thing, and we should be able to block that with the 60 votes. But you shouldn't be able to do what I call these pocket filibusters.
Let's try another caller here before the end of the hour. D, very quick thought. You're on the air.
Oh,
welcome.
Oh, I'm thank you, and good evening. I have a question for the senator. From my understanding, and I want to understand this, the House and the Senate is democratically, I'm talking about the old Senate and yeah. House, democratically controlled. You could have passed anything that you wanted to without having any Republicans. Am I correct on that?
No, you're not. Under the Senate rules, we cannot bring an issue to a final vote unless we have 60% of the vote of the Senate.
Okay.
So that under the current Senate rules, you cannot move a bill to passage unless you can get if anyone objects, if any member objects, any single member objects, you can't bring a member an issue to a final vote unless you go through a cloture process, which requires 60 votes.
Okay, so in other words, then you had some Democrats that was not satisfied with the bill, as well as Republicans.
No, we only, at the end we only had 58 Democrats, and we needed 60 votes. We didn't have 60 Democratic votes.
So that's interesting to explain to listeners, because I think what Dee is saying confuses a lot of people. So even though the Democrats were in a majority,
we had one time we had 60, we lost one, we went to 59. Then we went when Senator Brown was elected in Massachusetts, and then when the Illinois Senator Kirk arrived, we went down to 58 seats, 58 Democrats out of 100, and so we didn't have the 60 vote threshold for the end of the Congress during that period of time.
So that any vote, if it comes to the House or anywhere else, that comes to the Senate floor, that if it doesn't have 60 votes to go to the floor, it can't go to the floor?
It goes to the floor. You get it to the floor. You can't get it off the floor unless you get a 60-vote threshold if an individual senator objects. Now, there's some exceptions to that. There's some things like the budget resolution, which you can get by simple majority. There are some certain exceptions. What normally happens, the normal Senate procedures would be that the leader will get an agreement with the Republican leader to consider a bill, certain amendments, and then to vote on it with a time limit. You can get, but that's the unanimous consent agreement. Any senator objects. So the answer to the caller's question, when you have 58 votes, you do not have a working majority in the United States Senate. You need 60 votes to have a working majority in the United States Senate. That is wrong. That's not majority rule. I couldn't agree with you more. A filibuster should be used for extraordinary circumstances. It shouldn't be a routine issue requiring a 60-vote 60% threshold. That's not democracy. Democracy should be, the rule should be majority rule.
Well, this has been interesting. I didn't expect us to get a lesson in Senate procedure, but I think we needed it.
Well, I think we do, and that's why we're trying to change the Senate procedures now. We have a chance to do it. We hope we can.
I hope you can, too. I think that the democratization of the process is part of getting more people involved in the political process.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Mark. Agree.
Thank you so much, Ben. It's great to always talk to you, and good luck to you in the coming year in the Senate.
Good. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. I look forward to doing this again.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Our guest has been Senator Ben Cardin, who will be joining us again. We soon will have Senator Barbara Mikulski on the air. We need to talk to her as well, and our other representatives from left and right and center. We're going to take a very brief break. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, go to www.mecu.com. We'll be right back, and we will have a debate on, do we need more prisons being built? Another one is being proposed for women. Before that, we'll be hearing from April Yvonne Garrett and the new Amplify Baltimore movement she's beginning. Stay with us. We'll be right back.